B-Pod Studios.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ryan, the hit.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Star Market booth at the Boston Sports Grill on Canal Street. Sponsored by Bud Light. It's Felger and Mass. It's the Stanley Cup Finals on 98.5, the Sports Hub. And streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Here's Parikel on the far side. Oh, stick candles in front. Shoots to the goal. Rask the save. Bodies fall. The Bruins pound on Shen. Knock him down in front. The clock's going to go down to zero, and the Boston Bruins win game number one by a score of 4-2. The Blues had a 2-0 lead and gave the game back to the Bruins. They'll go into game two trailing in the series, 1-0.
Hi, welcome back. Felger and Maz here from the Boston Sports Grill, Canal Street Bruins Fan Fest. Joining us now from the Star Market broadcast booth is Lou Korak. He covers the Blues for NHL.com. Lou, thanks so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, what do you expect from the Blues tonight?
I think they'll bounce back. They'll give a good effort tonight, and they'll have a good performance. I think that I can't tell you if they're going to win or not. I mean, I think this is a totally different animal that they're facing here in this series.
You don't sound that confident in the Blues, Lou.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that, because throughout these playoffs, they've had bounce-back efforts pretty soundly. People rode them off after they got waxed against San Jose in Game 1. I mean, let's face it, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't good. They didn't do a lot of good in that game. And people had rode them off thinking that this is going to be a pretty easy series for the Sharks to win. And they turn around and win Game 2 pretty convincingly, 4-2. I thought it could have been a much bigger result than it was, and then obviously they rally after the illegal hand pass and just took care of the Sharks pretty easily, I thought. I mean, outscored them 12-2 and winning the last three games. So they've got a good veteran group that they've kind of got that, been there, done that. And ever since they went on this run in January, it's kind of been a us against the world mentality. And I just think they kind of used that as a rallying cry, and I think they're going to do it again.
Okay, so why do you think the Bruins are a different animal, though? From your perspective,
just balanced. I mean, I literally believe when you've heard coaches talk about it, players have talked about it, that it's like looking in the mirror, and they're very balanced. They don't care who they particularly put out there against a particular group. I don't think matchups are that big of a deal, because you saw the other night, Cassidy was more than willing to put his fourth line out there against the Braden Schenn line, and I think the Blues are in. They're the same way. They'll match their fourth line against your top line, and they've done it throughout the playoffs. And you've got good mobile defensemen there that like to pinch, sort of like the Blues do. Whoever wins that battle of the neutral zone usually is going to be the team that prevails. And these are two teams that really like to play and get and generate speed through the neutral zone. I see that quite a bit. I saw that the other night. Boston had a heck of an advantage there, as far as I'm concerned, in Game 1.
So what was the biggest thing from the Blues game that has to be there that was missing in Game 1 from your perspective?
Well, just exits out of the defensive zone. I mean, they always talk about when they play too spread out, that's when they tend to run into a lot of trouble. When the forwards and the defensemen are connected, that's when they and they play as that five-man unit. You hear it a lot. That's when you tend to see this team play. There's a lot of cohesion there. They don't turn the puck over as much. It's pretty smooth, pretty fluid. Now, having Vince Dunn would really help in that department, because this is a guy that transitions pucks out of the D-zone really well. And not having him definitely hurts, but they've got guys more than capable. Colton Parayko, probably to me the smoothest puck transitioner out of the defensive zone on that blue line, does it seamlessly, it seems like. But that's one area that they're going to have to the passes, they're going to have to connect the passes a lot shorter. I mean, they can't try to stretch from their D zone to the center red line or to the opposition's blue line. You just can't do that. I mean, Boston was just sitting there waiting for these passes, and when you had these neutral zone turnovers, that's where they were able to generate speed, and they're coming at you with a fury.
Luke Korak, he covers the Blues for NHL.com. Are you sick to death to the point you want to puke your guts out hearing about the Torrey Krug hit?
Yeah, I really am. Let's move on from it. It's over and done with. And I've talked to a few different people, and actually a couple of former players that even told me, if you start calling that, now what's the precedent then?
Oh,
now what are you going to look at?
Oh, hold on.
Here?
I'm not even talking about a penalty aspect. I'm talking about just people making it something that, you know, may not have been. I mean, it was a nice hit, but Lord.
I agree. I mean, the vantage point that I had watching the game, I'm literally sitting behind the one end of the goal, so it happened on the far side for me. When I saw it live, I'm thinking, oh, my God, it looked like he just decapitated his head. But then I didn't see any of the Blues players really react, because if you clock somebody in the head like that, you're going to get jumped, let's put it that way. And I didn't see that happen, so I had to take a look at it again, and I'm like, it's just a solid hit. I mean, he got him flush, puck's there, and
do you think the Blues are sick of being asked about it?
Yeah, because they don't, and I can bring up the example of the illegal hand pass, just controversial things. They really didn't want to talk about that. So many people were trying just to bait these guys into just ripping the league over the call, and they didn't want to go there. And I think that really played a benefit to them, and I think it's going to be the same here. You don't see guys really whining and crying about it right now. It happened. It's part of the game. Hockey's a violent sport. Move on.
Tell us a little bit more about this Vince Dunn, because we keep hearing about him. He matters that much. They're missing him defensively.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, the prototypical offensive defenseman that, you know, likes to move pucks, and good quarterback on the power play, and a guy that they're going to miss there. And if there's anything that, you know, they're going to continue to work on him moving forward, is just his play in the defensive zone. And I think that goes with any young defenseman. I mean, look, he's in his second year in the league, and it's a trial by process. You got to live and learn. To me,
what was the injury?
He took a puck to the mouth, believe it or not. And it was, you could see it right away. Brendan Dillon in game 3 of the conference final, just an innocent shot from the point. Got him flush in the mouth, and you can see it. I mean, dropped his stick, dropped his gloves. He almost looked disoriented. I mean, you could just see the blood, and it wasn't really good. And, you know, I had heard broken jaw, and he was wearing a caged helmet there for a few days. But I find that hard to believe now, because he's since lost that. So, and he seems to be okay. I honestly thought there was a chance that he could play tonight, but apparently they're taking a precautious route here, and going to stick with the same six. Guys that actually, before game one the other night, had actually played really well in the 3 games that Dunn was out. So
I'm just curious, both Thomas being out and this Dunn being out, it's like, if you're at all on the borderline and you're missing these games, am I right to look at that and go, especially Thomas, because, I don't know, now it makes it look like that hit was even more impactful, that you actually knocked him out. Where, I don't know, should those guys be playing? And if they're borderline and they're not, does that tell me something about the makeup there?
Well, with Thomas, and Craig Berube even said it today, that the hit has nothing to do with him being out.
So, do you believe that?
Yeah, actually, because he's missed quite a bit of, actually going back to game 3 of the conference final. He's been taking morning skates off. There's an underlying injury there that they're kind of being cautious with, and you know, without knowing 100%, I don't want to speculate what it is.
It's just the optics. You're not knocking me out of the game with that overrated hit that I got to listen to for 2 straight days. I'm going to be in the lineup, and I'll see you on. You know, like that mentality.
Right.
I wonder, from the St. Louis perspective, I hope I'm not reading too much into that. I just wonder about that. How about Berube's imprint on the team? Because if Berube were playing.
Oh, right. he'd be in the lineup.
He'd be in the lineup. He'd be tracking someone down. He'd be settling the thing on the ice. And
absolutely.
Does he impart that to his team, or is he more of a modern coach?
No, this is why these players respect him, and his fingerprints are all over this group now. And I think that's where it comes into play, like I said earlier, about the us against the world mentality. He's pretty much gone into that locker room and said, nobody's giving you guys a chance to make the playoffs. Nobody's giving you guys a chance to beat Winnipeg. Nobody's giving you a chance to beat Dallas. Nobody's giving you a chance to beat San Jose. What the F are you going to do about it? And he'll walk out. He pretty much, he pretty much has that tough guy image mindset, and he's implemented that with these players, and they've bought into it.
Give me your thoughts on Jordan Binnington.
Just like he, just kind of like you see him, the perception is pretty real. I mean, you guys saw the interview, the comment. Do I look nervous? That's how he is. I mean, I know a lot of people can take his mindset and attitude the wrong way, but that's just who he is. He's very laid back and really doesn't let a lot get to him. You'll see that tonight. He's, you know, the Bruins fans are going to get on him, and rightfully so. Why wouldn't they? But they did the same thing in Winnipeg, and that's a tough place to play, and he just kind of brushes everything to the side, and I think the players have taken on his image. They turn around and they see, well, if nothing bothers him, why should it bother us?
So, you know, we obviously don't see a lot of the Blues during the regular season. So, Mike, I have a question about the physicality aspect. Do they hit you or do they just lean on you? Like, what are they?
I think it's a little bit of both, and you saw a perfect example in the San Jose series. They like to grind you down. And Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, perfect examples. Guys don't want to get hit. Well, the Blues know that, and they knew that, and they continue to. They'll just continue to come at you until you've had enough. And Erik Karlsson, I don't want to say he waved the white flag. I mean, he's been injured for the majority of part of the year, but they wore him down. And Brent Burns, the same way, he turned a couple of pucks over in that series because he doesn't want to get hit. These are guys that like to have the puck, and they know that.
So I didn't see a lot of that in game one.
No, and well, that's because when you're turning pucks over in the neutral zone, you don't have a chance to get pucks in deep and go in on the forecheck, and that's something they stressed today. They didn't have that opportunity. Bruins got more mobile defensemen that had, to me, too much of an easier time getting pucks out. You're not going to get hit You're not going to get hit then.
Okay, Luke Orrick of NHL.com covers the Blues. Are you in St. Louis then?
I am.
Okay. As a St. Louisian, okay, just a final question. How sick of Boston is St. Louis?
I haven't heard too much yet. I'm waiting to get home tomorrow. So,
have you had about enough of us? Like, enough of the
I've had enough of
the
us.
The Kukin is one thing. Like, exactly. We're sick of us. Never mind you, who basically can't beat us. You know, are you sick to death of seeing Boston at this level, whatever the sport?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I saw the Dennis Leary video, but we haven't had a title in 4 months. Come on, you know, there's this franchise hasn't had a Stanley Cup in, you know, 50 plus years, and you're talking about 4 months. And I mean, great, good for the town. I mean, you got winning sports teams. The Red Sox, Patriots are doing it. As much as I hate to say it, because I'm not a Patriots fan, and but you know, hey, winners are winners. You know, you have every right to talk and back it up, you know? So might as well live on top of the world, right?
Okay. We'll be out there on the whole weekend. Felger Mazza coming out
okay.
there. So we'll get a temperature of the city. I know
you will hear it. Trust me.
If the roles were reversed,
we'd hate you like poison.
Oh, my God.
You're way too nice, I can tell already.
All right. Lou, thanks for coming by. I appreciate
Absolutely,
it.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks. We're going to take an update from Murray, and then we're going to come back and just give you a Red Sox minute. We'll be mostly Bruins today, but we do have to just touch on. Maybe there's some hope for you yet, Lou, because the Red Sox bullpen is once again crapping itself. We got to give you a Red Sox minute. We'll do that next right after
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's the Stanley Cup Finals, and we're at the Boston Sports Grill from the Star Market booth, sponsored by Bud Light. It's Felger and Mass on the only place for the local call of the game, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matt Barr.
You again?
Colton Brewer.
Who?
Ryan Brazier.
Brazier.
And those other guys.
It's back for 2019. An all-new Wheel of Gutless Bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high-leverage situation late in the game. Now, let's spin the wheel.
Barnes. Brazier.
Thornburg.
Johnson.
Johnson.
Thornburg.
Brazier.
Barnes.
Embry.
Work.
Brazier.
Johnson.
Thornburg. Kroger, Velasquez, Embry, Johnson. And today's gutless bum is...
Well, Boston will turn it over to Ryan Brazier, who's been doing most of their closing. Looking up and watching this one get out of here is Jackie Bradley Jr. Wow, did that ball take off? Boston has 8 blown saves this year. They only have 12 saves, 8 blown. It's not a very good percentage. Allen drives one to deep right. Down the line it goes. Gone! We are tied on Greg Allen's first home run of the year. How about that? Alex Cora makes a pitching change. Lakins uses the windup, kicks, fires, and swung on, drill. Deep right field, back is Betts, track, wall, he got a glove on it, dropped the ball. Into scores Lindor, Mercado is following him home. Into second is Luplo, and stopping at third is Santana. The gold glover, the MVP, got back near the wall, reached up, got a glove on it, and didn't catch it. And the Indians take the lead 7-5.
And now we have your Boston Red Sox. Quick Sox Minute. The Wheel of Gutless Buns remains. For those who didn't watch the game last night, Maz, quick recap on your thoughts.
Okay, Red Sox allowed 7 runs in the 8th and 9th and blew the game. There you go. That's it. 7 runs in the 8th and 9th. 5 in the 9th inning. 5. And it was 5-2 going into the 9th. First of all, it was 3-1 going into the 8th. They gave up 2. No, they gave up 1 to make it 3-2. I'm sorry. Then they scored 2 to make it 5-2, and they gave up 5. After they scored 2, they gave up 5. And the two bums who hit home runs, Roberto Perez, who's a stiff suckbag catcher, and the other guy, Greg Allen.
Not just a stiff or a suckbag, a stiff suckbag.
Greg Allen, who hit the game-tying home run, was 5-46 this season with no homers before he jacked one into the seats on an 0-1 pitch against Ryan Brazier.
Holy crap.
5-46. Oh, talk about embarrassing. Like, as embarrassing as it gets. What a horrendous loss. And Tom Hamilton's wrong. It's not 8 blown saves. It's now 9. 9, and I know he said it before. They actually blew it. 9 blown saves. So that bullpen that we were all worried about is biting them in the ass big time.
So I live in the suburbs, and I get the paper like Don Cherry, Murray. I get a newspaper, and because when you live in the suburbs, you get an early edition. So they file their stories before the game is over. Today was a very valuable early edition because today on the front page of my Boston Globe, Pete Abraham on baseball, the baseball columnist for the Globe, writes a column before the game is over because you have to file something for the first edition. And he writes, headline, bullpen a source of great relief. This is no joke. He says, 1/3 of the season is over, Maz, and the Red Sox are proving you don't need an established closer to be successful.
Oh, please. Even before that happened last night, they've been walking a tightrope with this collection of suckbag pitchers. Please.
Pete writes, what they said would work in spring training has, in fact, worked, he says. He says, through Monday's victory against the Cleveland Indians, again, that was, you know, the night before, the Sox were 21-1, Maz, when leading after 8 innings, and 22-3 when leading after 7. He says, the relief pitchers are among American League leaders in strikeouts per 9, whip, opponents on base percentage, and strikeout-to-walk ratio. He says Sox relievers also have been worth a 2.3 WAR.
Oh, God.
As calculated by Fangraphs. Now, if anyone could tell me what that practically means, I'd like to know what
they
it
can.
Is.
No idea. These nerds,
what does
that,
what does that mean? That
no
they have
idea.
A collective WAR of 2.3, but he says that is only second to the Yankees, or he says only the Yankees at 3.7 WAR have a significantly higher figure. Let me give you just one more, and then you can respond. Again, this was before the Sox blew it last night. I didn't bother to read his revised column because why bother? This is too good. He says Alex Cora and pitching coach Dana Lavangie have cracked the code.
You've got to be kidding me.
Cora and Lavangie, Maz, have cracked the code.
I mean, look, again, I'm with Murray. I disagree with it vehemently before last night because I would say to you, you can give me all the numbers you want. 8 blown saves before last night. And more importantly, They've had one of the easiest schedules in the game. So you want to talk about the fact that they haven't blown leads after the 7th and the 8th? I can tell you right now, just off the top of my head, they blew a game at New York where Brazier gave up a grand slam after Workman loaded the bases. They blew two games against Houston that I can remember off the top of my head. One, the game that Porcello pitched when, what's his name, Cora left him in. And then they went to Houston and tied the game. Barnes went in and blew it. So maybe, you know, the first round, I guess, would have been on Porcello. And then last night against Cleveland. I just rattled off four off the top of my head. Four. How many games are they out in the division? Six and a half?
Seven or something?
So you're telling me those four games don't make a difference? And that we're okay with them doing this now?
I'm just telling you what Pete wrote during the game.
He should have been embarrassed to have write that. I mean, no offense. Great guy and all. But please, like that, you know that what this bullpen is what they showed you last night. And you know, you look at some of the numbers, too. In the three innings that they pitched last night, it was it seven walks and one hit batter?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah, again, and they brought in this Travis.
And Lee. The walks have been a problem before last night's game anyway from this collection of bums that are on the wheel of Gutless Bums, thus the name, and thus the reason we're going to keep spinning it unless there's going to be any changes made by Dave Dombrowski. And I don't know how that's going to happen because, their farm system's barren. There's not really much they're going to be able to do. This was going to catch up with them eventually. I mean, you can't be surprised by this.
Workman's walked guys all year. Right, Barnes got two outs last night. They took him out. And then you're left with, for the 8th and 9th, you are left with, or I should say the 7th in there, too, is Brazier and Walden. Walden, who's turned into a pumpkin overnight.
Bullpen a source of great relief. One-third of the season is over, and the Sox are proving you don't need an established closer to be successful.
What a joke.
What they said would work in spring training has, in fact, worked. He says... Alex Cora and Dana Lavangi have cracked the code.
Oh, God, it's great. It's ridiculous. They don't have enough guys in that bullpen. That's the bottom line. And to blow that game last night, I'm sorry, every single one matters because you're chasing now. You're chasing. There's seven out in the loss column behind New York and Tampa. Seven in the loss column.
Okay, so there's a little Bruins breather for you with the Sox Minute. You want to weigh in on that? You can get back to your calls on whatever you like in our long commercial-free segment next.
It's Felger and Mass, the Boston Sports Grill from the Star Market Booth, sponsored by Bud Light on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's Felger and Mass from the Star Market Booth at the Boston Sports Grill. The Stanley Cup Finals, the only place for the local call of the game. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
McAvoy wheels over the line, high slot. Shoots, he scores! Charlie McAvoy would not be denied. Grabbed the puck out at center ice, darted over the line, and whistled one by the glove hand of Binnington. We're tied at two.
All right, several responses we're looking for tonight from the Blues. Physicality, shutting people up on the media, whoever, on the Krug hit, which I'm sure they're sick to death of listening to, and having to ask questions about. And I would say also the St. Louis D, that on the Bruins' goals, at least, gave up so much room. It's when you go back and watch it, it's mind-boggling. And the McAvoy goal, chief among them, now it was a power play goal, and the two best guys were out there for St. Louis, and Parayko and Pietrangelo. But when you watch how much they backed up into their own zone. I mean, Charlie McAvoy almost got to the faceoff dot before he released the puck because that's when he finally met that Blues defensive line, if you will. That, to me, I would be stunned if I don't see those big guys on St. Louis standing up much higher in the zone at the blue line, not even let the just showing some toughness when the Bruins are entering the zone. And I just start with that. Some of the coverage from that St. Louis D-Corps in that game was unbelievable.
I mean, it's striking, really, because, again, McAvoy collected the puck in the neutral zone. He skated over the blue line and just kept going forward because they let him. Really, they let him. And then ultimately he got in close enough where he was, what, 60 feet away and shot the puck? If that, it might have been less. like really ridiculous. And they did a similar thing when Corrali got the puck on the Clifton goal. And he ended up throwing the centering pass to Clifton that he deflected in. So I just think that if they play him that way, they're giving it, if they're worried about the Bruins' speed, they're giving him way too much respect.
Absolutely.
Way too much respect. So they got to step up and start taking the body there or closing up space, doing something. Because if they just let the Bruins skate around like that, they're going to get smoked.
Okay, back to your phones. A lot of you waiting patiently. Thank you for doing so. John in Springfield, what do you got, John?
Yeah, how you doing, boys? Two things real quick. I just want to shore up a misconception. I think the reason the media is questioning the Krug hit, and not because it was such a great hit, it was because that the national media is questioning if it was a penalty or not. Because at that point, you know, it was a 2-2 game. You know, and the national media is even going stretching as far as saying it could have been a major. So, I think you're kind of wrong about the reason why they're bringing it up.
Now, I didn't hear any of that, John. I listened through all those press conferences. I didn't hear anyone ask them about whether that should have been a penalty or not. I heard them ask about the guy that
you just said on thought you were talking about if it was a penalty or not. I mean, if you're looking at the national media shows today, it's all about the penalty. But anyways, regardless, the major thing is if St. Louis, I mean, you guys are kind of, I mean, St. Louis is a good team. I mean, they beat Winnipeg, Dallas, and San Jose. And they had a game taken away from them in San Jose, and they still came back to beat all those three teams. You know, I mean, I just think they punched back at every time. You know, I just think that tonight it's a given that they're going to win this game. I mean, we'll see it, because if they lose this game, they lose the series. There's no way.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. I agree. Well, no, I don't necessarily agree. It's not over if it's 2-0. It's not. But I fully expect them to punch back. I do. And I'll be really disappointed if they don't. And so I just need to see that.
I can't imagine they wouldn't. How do you get to the Stanley Cup final, lose game one, and not hit back?
And then have to hear for 48 straight hours about some forcocked hit. I mean, to me, and again, that's how St. Louis is built. That's how their coach's career was built, for crying out loud. How could they not respond? And in a physical manner on top of it all. Pete in Westminster. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, what's going on, boys? How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Hey, so I just wanted to talk about the depth of the Bruins in that.
We just can't do your speakerphone. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's so obnoxious.
It's disrespectful is what it is.
It really is. I hate that.
Joe in Pittsfield. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. Hey, let's not get too carried away about Krug's hit. It all kind of started when they had a tussle in front of the net there, and the guy ripped his thing off and everything. I just have a question for you, Mike. I heard Tony Amonte say something about this guy Perron. Is he a kind of an edge player for St. Louis or not?
No, he's a Canadian, and what I mean by that, a Montreal Canadian. I don't want to get ethnic on you, but he's a French-Canadian. He sort of has...
Quebecian.
A Quebecian, and has some of those qualities that we're not big fans of. So I think that was sort of a Monty... I'm not putting words in his mouth. I'm just... He's got a little bit of that Montreal Canadian rat sort of thing to him.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. I think it tells you something that he does that with Krug, and then hightails it to the bench and never turns around to face Krug, knowing that if he keeps his back to him, it's either penalty or Krug's not going to hit him. And that's why Rob Thomas got lit up. The reason Rob Thomas got lit up is because Perron wouldn't turn around and face Krug after the stuff with the helmet in front of the Bruins' net.
So the real guy Thomas should be pissed at is Perron.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. That's the way to get the message across to a team. You're going to play that way? We'll take it out on your teammates.
Tony and Shirley, go ahead, Tony. I'll give you a full 45 seconds.
Hey, you are good. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Michael, listen, I'm telling you right now, I've been yelling 300 times for the last three series to shoot the puck. I missed yesterday. I had my third rotator cuff done. I played hockey like you, Mike. I'm going to tell you something. When McAvoy shot, Maz, it was 30 feet out. It got deflected. When you seen that goalie put his head down, he had it, but it got deflected. How many times do all you guys in the intern screen, shoot the puck? I've been doing it for three series now. They try to throw it through six players, and it would have hit the back of the net. And if they had a dull first period, I get it. I'm going to tell you something. The Bruins are going to win outright tonight because they got too many good and fast skaters, and I'm not even going to be able to hit them. And one thing that scares me, if it's close, Mike, if it's close, if it bounces over their stick in a power play, Bruins in tendency to give up shorthanded goals. Other than that, shoot the puck, and they'll win. The guy gives up rebounds. Thank you very much. Tony from Shirley out.
Okay, minute and 3 seconds. Let's not get carried away with the I played hockey like you, Mike. played into the 10th grade, which is like, please.
Yeah, he's had three Rotor Cups.
Whatever that is. The There was one thing I did want to pick up on.
Getting cute on with the puck.
Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah.
That would drove me crazy.
The cross-ice passing.
Brutal.
Trying to find those seams was just...
Pastrnak and Marchand. Like, just shoot the puck like the caller just said.
It was insufferable in that game.
And it is those two guys.
It's those two guys.
No, they think they're playing ping pong. Two of them on the side there just hitting the thing over the net all night. Like, it drove me bananas. And Pastrnak in particular, because frankly, I think he's less creative than Marchand. Marchand's a better passer. Pastrnak's job is to shoot the puck. Shoot the effing puck. Like, get your ass on the faceoff circle, line up, and let it go. That's what you're there for. Marchand's a little bit more of a playmaker. I give a little more latitude. But even him, I'd say the same thing. Shoot the damn puck.
Here's Murray's update. 90 seconds, no commercials. Right back to your calls, Felger Maz from the Boston Sports Grill Fan Fest on Canal Street as we get ready for Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Don't go anywhere. No spots here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.